I think we should talk about the Rebbe in preparation for Av Nissen. The Rebbe's father, Reb Levick, as I'm sure you know, was a Ben Achaben, was a direct descendant from the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek. Depending on how you count it, he was either the fourth generation or the fifth generation. In the family of the Tzemach Tzedek, of the Rebbe's father, there was a Messiah, there was a tradition that says that the oldest of the Tzemach Tzedek's children, the Ravash, the Baruch Shalom, who should have been the Tzemach Tzedek's successor, because a Bechoyin, Api Alocha, is supposed to get the first pickings. So the Tzemach Tzedek told him he shouldn't be a Rebbe. And he said to him that if he will not be a Rebbe, he'll get double measure, he'll get Pishnaim, he'll get double measure. And it'll come back to his family in four generations. This is what the Tzemach Tzedek told the Ravash. So the Rebbe's great-grandfather and grandfather and father had this tradition that the Nesius of Chabad has to come over to their branch of the family after four generations. It's known among Chassidei Chabad that the Rebbe Levick actually thought that he's supposed to be a Rebbe. But when the Rebbe became a Chosin to the Rebbe, and he says, okay, I was off by a generation, and he got his double measure. Rebbe Levick was a giant of giants. The greatness of Rebbe Levick, the Rebbe's father, is only dwarfed by the fact that he had a son like the Rebbe. That's all. That's the only reason you don't know how great he was, because he had a son who was greater than him. The Rebbe Rashab used to say that when Mashiach comes, he's going to take three of his chassidim by the hand, he's going to lead them and introduce them to Mashiach, and he's going to say to Mashiach, Ru'u gidulim shegidati, look at the children that I have brought you. And the three were Rebbe Levick, the Rebbe's father. There was a Yid, Rebbe Mendel Chain, his name was Rebbe Mendel Chain, who was killed al Kiddush Hashem in 1919. And there was a Yid by the name of Rebbe Zalman Schneerson of Lodz, Zalman Lodger. And I heard that the Rebbe said that Rebbe Mendel Chain he'll introduce to Mashiach as his expertise in Nigla. And Rebbe Zalman Lodger was a big Mokubal expertise in Pnimi Satere. And Rebbe Levick was an expert at both. This was the Rebbe's father, Rebbe Levick. Rebbe Levick married Rebbe Tzemachana, and as was his tradition, when they got married, I figured that Rebbe Levick was around 20. Rebbe Levick was 2 years older than the Friedrich Rebbe. Friedrich Rebbe was born in 1880, Rebbe Levick was born in 1878, 2 years earlier. And he married Rebbe Tzemachana, and as was normal in those days, when you got married, you moved into the home of your kallah's family. That's how they lived in the olden days. If a couple got married, they lived poshet in the home of the mother of the parents of the wife. And Vesach, she helped them learn how to be married. Rebbe Levick sat al teidav al avayda. He sat day and night and learned. And all the chassidim in Nikolaev, where they lived, Nikolaev was one of the most famous chassidish shtetelach in the colonias in the Kherson region in Ukraine. Everybody knew Rebbe Levick was extraordinary. He was sachakal, a 20-year-old younger manchik. And all the elder chassidim used to be machater acharav to see what time he gets up in the middle of the night, and his avoydich, his ablevik, besides for being a great talmid chacham and a great gaon, was an unbelievable avid elikim. The Rebbe's parents had a hard time having children. The Rebbe was the firstborn, and he was not a pinyan aben. The Rebbe was born 4 years after their wedding, and there was a lot of difficulty. It wasn't pashut. They had difficulties having children. And when the Rebbe was born, apparently there was a sakana also. When the Rebbe was born, there was a sakana. The fact is that on the day that the Rebbe was born, Yud Aleph Nisan Tafrei Shamach Beis, 1902, the Rebbe Rashab sent six telegrams from Lubavitch to Nikolaev. And apparently some of those telegrams had to do pashut with Gashmi Zdikazach, with medical things. But I suppose that there was also Ruchni Zdik and Yonim in these six telegrams. Of course, any person would pay all the money in the world to find out what those telegrams said. But we're going to have to wait for Mashiach to make that discovery, I think, I suspect. Six telegrams were sent to Nikolaev from Lubavitch on the day that Rebbe was born. Rebbe was born in Aleph Nissen. His bris was, of course, Pesach. His bris was Chai Nissen, which happens to be his father's birthday. The Rebbe's bris was on the Blavik's birthday. And this is where the Rebbe grew up, Nikolaev. Nikolaev was a little shtetl. Tiny little shtetl. And by the way, I forgot to mention that the Rebbe's in Chana, the Rebbe's mother, got a bunch of instructions from the Rebbe Rashab how she should behave. The Rebbe wore a yarmulke from his bris, and the Rebbe Rashab said to the Rebbe Tzachana, for sure from his bris, and even better, it'll be better if he wore a yarmulke earlier. The Rebbe always wore a yarmulke. I don't know if you people know this story, that there's a famous picture of the Rebbe with the sailor outfit. You know what I'm talking about? With that beautiful long hair, that picture of the Rebbe. When the Rebbe saw the picture, he tore it in half. He was very upset. He says, I always wear yarmulke, you don't see the yarmulke in the picture. And the Rebbe was very disturbed that there's a published picture of him that doesn't show that he had a yarmulke. The Rebbe said, I wore a yarmulke from the bris. And the Rebbe Zalchana got all kinds of instructions from the Rebbe Rashab, from Lubavitch, how she should behave with the Rebbe. She had two more sons. She didn't get such instructions. Just for the oldest son, the Rebbe got special instructions. And some of the instructions are rather involved. For example, the Rebbe told her that every time she feeds the Rebbe, she has to wash negavaser, and she has to wash the baby negavaser. Right? Now, if you know what it means to be a mother with a baby that's 2 months old and 3 months old, is getting up every 2 hours, every 3 hours, you feed the baby in bed. Every time the Rebbe nursed the Rebbe, she had to get up and she had to wash negavaser, and she has to wash the Rebbe negavaser. Every time the Rebbe nursed. And apparently there was instructions to the effect, you have to watch this child from too many eyes. Nikolaev, the Rebbe Tzachana's father, was the Nikolaev Erov. Yanovsky, the Meir Shlomo Yanovsky, the Rebbe Tzachana's father, the Rebbe Zayde, was the Erov of Nikolaev. And Nikolaev was a city where the mud was Chassidus. All there was Chassidim. It was a village that the Mittler Rebbe had founded. The Mittler Rebbe built whole communities of Chassidim who became farmers, and they had Panosa, Bechavid, V'layde Matnes Basar Adam, and it was Mamish, it was a purely Chassidish world before the Rebbe grew up in the Shtetl and Nikolaev. Everything around him was Chassidim. His parents were Chassidim, his Eidus were Chassidim. Everything around him was Kulei Chassidus. Whatever he knew in his early years as a child was only Varmkeit and Yiddishkeit and Chassidus. His two younger brothers were also born in Nikolaev. And there are stories about the Rebbe's childhood that are interesting. There are people who remember the Rebbe from Nikolaev. The Altheis are Nikolaev. The Rebbe was 2 years old, and there was a minion in the house by the Rebbe Zayde, by the Meir Shlomo. And they had a Fabrengen, and after Fabrengen they davened Maariv. And the Rebbe was two, and he was in a playpen. And when the minion got up to say Baruch Hu, the Rebbe stood up, put his feet together, and he bent his head, just like he did 50 years later. And the Rebbe saw what the Rebbe was doing, so she ran in and she grabbed him and she pulled him out. She didn't want people should see. And there were a number of such things that we know. As a matter of fact, that apparently the Rebbe Rashab Chod Bavoren said that they have to be weary of Ayin Hara. That people shouldn't see the Rebbe, and they certainly shouldn't see that he's extraordinary. The Rebbe, as a little child, was extraordinarily serious. If you know anything about our Rabbeim, some of our Rabbeim were kids. When they were little, they had fun. I mean, you're talking about a Rebbe. Reb Marash had fun. Reb Marash's fun is a different type of fun, but nevertheless, Reb Marash was a child. Even by the Tzemach Tzedek, we have a Vesach. The Rebbe was never a child. The Rebbe Rashab was never a child. Came drinking kinder. The seriousness on their face. You look at that picture of the Rebbe as a two-year-old, you see, he wasn't an ordinary child. He looks extremely... scared, but he looks... focused. He doesn't look like a three-year-old. He looks like someone who's thinking. The Rebbe was never a child. From the earliest years, there was a seriousness about him. He never wasted his time, and he was always busy. He went to cheder. The Rebbe always talked about his going to cheder. It wasn't exactly a normal cheder, you know what I'm saying? And there's a story that goes that his children used to always complain to him, how come he never plays with them? How come he's always busy, he doesn't play with them? So it's okay, what are you playing? I'm playing marbles. We just throw up the marbles. So someone had a handful of marbles. He threw up the handful of marbles, and the Rebbe told him how many marbles he threw up, and he kept walking. And he counted correctly at a glance. He threw up a handful of marbles, and the Rebbe told him how many marbles he threw up, and he kept going. That was the end of the game. Game was over. But the Rebbe didn't really play as a child at all. Mamash. He was a very unusually serious childhood. Bechlau, the Rebbe and his brothers were not normal children. All the three of them, three brothers, they were mamash not normal. They were children. There was a Yid who visited their house in Nikitinislav later on. When labeled, the Rebbe's youngest brother was five. Five-year-old boy. Yeah, you have five-year-old brothers. I have a five-year-old son. Yeah? He was sitting on a chair with his legs crossed, with a book in his lap, turning pages. So this younger man, this Tomim, this Bocher, is thinking that he's looking at a fairy tale. What a five-year-old look at. So when he finished the book and he closed it and he walked away, this Chassidish Bocher from Lubavitch wanted to see what The 5-year-old son of Levik, what kind of fairy tales his parents allow him to read? He opens it up to Mishnayos. They were not normal children. The Rebbe Sanchana said had to fight with them to eat, had to fight with them to sleep. The diligence, the hasmada, they were so completely consumed by Torah, they just didn't have time. They gave out 2 volumes of what's called early years, and of course, as soon as one comes out, you're looking forward to the next one. Videos, interviews of people who knew or heard about the Rebbe from his childhood. So the Rav of Krachabad, Rabbi Ashkenazi, relates that the Rebbe Tzinchana and the Rebbe's father, Rebbe Levik, had an argument that, it was, so to speak, went on for many, many years. The Rebbe Tzinchana was very proud of her children, and she wanted to talk about them. Tell, have such wonderful kids, and come meet my children, and they're so special. And Rebbe Levik said he doesn't want anybody to see his kids. Rebbe Levik was very, very concerned about it. This was an ongoing dispute in the house between the Rebbe's father and mother. The Rebbe's mother was very proud of her children, and she wanted to show them off and be proud of, you know, a doting mother. And Rebbe Levik said, no, not my kids. You know, let them grow up in secret. They have plenty of time to be shown, not now. In any case, when the Rebbe was 7, when the Rebbe was 5, there were pogroms. 4 or 5, there were pogroms. If you guys know this, there were pogroms in 1905, 1906. And again, if you know the history of Russia, you know that pogroms were not a mistake. Pogroms were orchestrated. The government, the king of Russia, with his, surrounding himself with Seyrei Yehudim, with Seyrei Yisrael, whenever there was political upheaval in Russia and the government wanted to distract from their own political problems, they would make pogroms. With pogroms, a lot of Jews were killed. A lot. In 1905, 1906, thousands of Jews were murdered. Pashut murdered in cold blood. And there were pogroms where the Rebbe was, in Nikolaev. And the Rebbe was 4 or 5 years old. And all the women and children were hid in some kind of a basement, in hoping that they wouldn't know where they were. And of course, it was extremely important that they should be quiet. And one of the children starts crying. What are you going to do? The Rebbe was 5. He was a little pitfrik himself. He went over to this little child, and with full understanding of how serious the situation was, played with the child and relaxed the child so the child just stopped crying. A wisdom, a maturity, a sense of awareness of what the real world is about at that young age the Rebbe had. In any case, like I said to you, at the age of 7, the Rebbe's life changed radically. Because the Rebbe's father got a job. Now, you may think that it was a wonderful that he got the job, but I can guarantee you that Levik was not very happy about his new job, although he did it, and he did it b'simcha tov libov. He became a rov. By this point, the Levik had been married approximately 11 years. They got married to Tafresh Menches. This is, that means 1898, this is 1909. There was a city in Russia called Yekaterinoslav. Now it's called Dnepropetrovsk. And the Rebbe, you should know, the Rebbe till this day calls it my shtut, my city. And the Rav of Yekaterinoslav was always a Lubavitcher Chosid. Always. Yekaterinoslav is an interesting city. It's south, it's on the Baltic Sea, it's on the Black Sea. The Baltic Sea and the Black Sea is top and bottom. So it's on the Black Sea, it's not on the Baltic Sea. The Baltic Sea is up here, the Black Sea is down there. And it was one of the few places in Russia where Jews lived in big cities. Russia, the government of Russia, because they loved Jewish people so much, they didn't let Jewish people live near any border cities. They didn't let Jewish people live near any large cities, nor military bases. They were very afraid. So Jews had to live in the interior of Russia, where it was very hard to make a living. That's why Jews were so poor. And then they would put in the propaganda papers that the Jews are a bunch of losers, they're not productive, they don't do anything, and so on. I mean, the cruelty of the Tsarists was only superseded by the communists, by the Bolsheviks, but the Tsarist regimes were very cruel to the Jewish people, extremely so. Jews couldn't live in big cities. Yekaterinoslav was an exception. It was a pretty big city, and it was a port city, it was an ocean. And there were Jews there. Why? Because when the city was established 100 and some years before, a fruma yid, a rich man, a pikach, a kluger yidl, settled in Yekaterinoslav. Because rich Jews were allowed to live in big cities because the government needed their commerce, their trade, their business, their productivity, and so on. And he created these puppet businesses, these make-believe businesses, as if he had this big youth industry going on, and he imported 400 families of Jews, as if they're working for him. And they weren't working for him. They established themselves, and by the time the Rebbe's parents moved to Yekaterinoslav, there were thousands of families of Yidden living in Yekaterinoslav. I don't know, maybe 10,000s of families of Jews. Lots of Yekaterinoslav was one of the few cities in Russia where you had a very significant Jewish population. In any case, the Yekaterinoslav Rav was always a Lubavitcher, because the beginning of it was by the Mittler Rebbe's times. Mittler Rebbe sent a Rav, and as soon as one Rav ended his role as Rav, then he was succeeded by another Rav. The Rav before the Rebbe's father was a Chassid by the name of Rebbe Revolf Kozevnikov, Rebbe Revolf Yekaterinoslav. He was a very big Chassid, a gifted speaker, a very talented man, which is a discussion for a different time. He passed away. Now, in 1909 in Russia, you're talking Mamish Ed of the First World War. The winds of change were blowing. The world was changing. It was a very, very, very up, very, very, very unsettled period of time. There were all these isms. You know, everybody was making a revolution. You know, there was Zionism and Yiddishism and communism and Bolshevism and you name it, there were isms. There were a million and one diseases of all different cultural and political types. And in the Jewish world also, there were all these isms. Many, many Yidden were caught up in these new ideas, because Yidden in Russia suffered so much. They were so poor, they were so abused. They were trying to lift their heads up, they were trying to make a life for themselves. And when these winds of change started to blow, and there was opportunity for people to make this a better life, Yidnam Zechzugichat, you know, the whole Amun Pshuta that a Jew is supposed to put into God, they put into all types of upper courses. And one of the places where these isms were most established and effective was in Yekaterinoslav, because it was a modern city and there were a lot of Jews. In a significant way, the city where all the Jewish sicknesses of the last century came from was the city where the Rebbe grew up. It's interesting to think that the Rebbe was exposed to secularism and modernness before the Friedrich Rebbe. He grew up in Yekaterinoslav. It was a modern city, and there were minim shoinim. There were so many different isms, you have no idea. So many different people with ideas, and everyone had secret meetings. And if you got caught, you went to jail. They said the government was trying to suppress it. So you went to a ton of tish and a bank. The whole world was in upheaval. And of course, then World War I happened, and the world blew up. And the world is still healing itself from World War I. In any case, and the position became available, the Rav passes away. As soon as the Rav passed away, there were 101 different factions fighting for the succession. In other words, the modern Jews said they wanted a modern Rav. The Freie Jews wanted a Freie Rav. Everybody wanted a Rav that would suit their purposes. And the Rebbe Rashab said, Lubavitch. So you had, you know, everybody made alliances with other groups to put themselves into positions of power to affect the outcome, who would be the next Rav. And this of the Misnagdim ganged up with this group and that group and the other group, a Bidnishkan Chosid, you know. Anyway, Rebbe Rashab put himself into this like it was his favorite project, and he made it his business that the Rav would be a Lubavitcher at all costs. And he chose the best candidate he could choose. He had nobody better. He chose the Blavik. The Blavik became Rav. He was Sa'ar HaKol, 31 years old. But he was a Blavik. And before he arrived, Mishtach, people were talking, oh, we're getting in one of those old-fashioned Rabbonim in a modern society, in a modern city, in a modern world. Etzin Sfafir, and he's going to make all kinds of Nukzedis and Takonis, and he's going to control us. You have to understand that Rav in Europe is not like Rav in America. Rav in Europe had power, real power. Every organization of Chinuch was under Rav's jurisdiction. Every organization of Kashis under the Rav's jurisdiction. Every organization of Tztaka under the Rav jurisdiction, and Rav had real power. The Blavik came to Yekaterinoslav not to be a nice guy, to lead. And he put his fingers and his hands up to his elbows into every area of Askanas Tziburis. And people didn't want him mixing into their business. But that's the job of a Rav. And the Blavik, over a course of a few years, fought many battles and established, I'm the boss. And the Chinuch was the way he wanted, the Kashrus was the way he wanted, the Rabbonis was the way he wanted, the Shuls were the way he wanted. Everything should be outside the Yesa Teif. He didn't make all Jewish people daven Nuschari. So the shul that the Rebbe was, father was Rav in, daven Nuschari Ashkenaz. The Rebbe grew up in the shul with daven Nuschari Ashkenaz. He didn't daven Nuschari. And the Rebbe was 7 when this all happened. 7 years old. The 7, big or little, decide for yourself. His brothers were even younger. And Reb Levick moved from Nikolaev to Yekaterinoslav. It's like moving from, what was compared to? Anybody here know anybody that lives in Iowa? You know that city that would have the Shechita, yeah? It's like moving from Iowa to Park Avenue, Manhattan. You know, it's, the contrast is so radical. The change, it's like going from a very calm, peaceful Hasidic world into a perpetual tornado. It's tremendous tumult. The Rebbe's parents moved. The Rebbe Rashab said, Lach v'cha, he was a chassid. The Rebbe Rashab made him a rov. This is his job. Finished it off. No questions asked. And Rebbe Levick became the Yekaterinoslav rov. And you should know this. People didn't like what he stood for. But it was impossible to not like Rebbe Levick. He was such a wonderful person. I mean, he was the Rebbe's father. In other words, the people who fought b'mesiras nefesh against what Rebbe Levick stood for personally loved him. He charmed everybody. Reb Levick was brilliant. He's a genius, obviously. And he knew everybody's language. He knew how to talk to everybody. He knew how to talk to the intellectuals. He knew how to talk to the artists. He knew how to talk to the humanitarians. He spoke everybody's language. So even people who personally couldn't stand the Yiddishkeit that Reb Levick was insisting on, but they couldn't help but be weakened in their resolve to fight him because of his personality. Reb Levick lasted till 1939. How come Levick wasn't arrested till then? Because the Jews protected him. The Jews who were in the Bolshevik and the Communist Party would warn him and say, tonight Levick, don't sleep at home. Reb Levick had a lot of friends because he was such a likable man, Pasha. He was brilliant. He was very personable, very easy to get along with. He was just an amazing people's person. Here you have this Yid who knows the Torah backwards and forwards, Baki B'chadra Torah. At the same time, he had unbelievable people skills and social skills and a political sense. You couldn't find a better Rav. I mean, does the Rebbe's father? Do I have to say anymore? There's nothing else that needs to be said. And the Rebbe's life changed completely. But it didn't change at all. He went from the nice, warm, Hamish, Hasidish, Stetel, Nikolaev to this tumultuous city. And his father was the leader of this crazy place. So the Rebbe's parents took himself an apartment. They took a very nice, big, comfortable apartment, which later on the Bolsheviks would cut in half. They took away half of their apartment. But the Chacham took a very huge apartment with many, many rooms. And one of the conditions that was established when they moved in is that each one of their boys should have their own room. They had three sons. And they had their own rooms. And the three boys sat ala teira v'ala veida like as if the world did not exist. The Rebbe and his brothers sat through World War I, through the worst period of Jewish history. In human history, they were kids. You're talking now about before Bar Mitzvah, after Bar Mitzvah. They were very little, with their nose and svarim yomam v'layla. They were dead to the world. Finished. The discussion came out. That's how they were. And in other words, the tumult of Yekaterinoslav did not change the Rebbe and his brother's life practically at all. But they went to shul. They were the sons of the Rav. People realized these are unusual children, these are special personalities, and there was a gevaldike hadas hakoved, there was a pride. The community of Yekaterinoslav was proud to have such a Rav. They were proud to have such bnei harav, the children of the Rav, and so forth and so on. And so the Rebbe grew up. One of the more amazing stories that the Rebbe Tzimchana, the Rebbe's mother, told about the Rebbe was that when the Rebbe was nine, okay? Anybody here nine? Nine. A kid was on the beach in Yekaterinoslav, the Black Sea, and he got swept away by a wave, and he was partially drowning. And the Rebbe, 9 years old, jumped into the water and saved the kid's life. And the whole city was talking about the 9-year-old hero who saved the child's life, and later was discovered it was the son of the Rebbe. The Rebbe never went swimming, I give you my word. I don't know it as a matter of fact, but I can tell you. Hey, Hapidin, you know, one of the things that a father is mechuyev to teach his children is how to swim. It's how Allah, it's the Gemara. He teaches children how to swim. So Rebbe knew how to swim, but he didn't swim too much. But he saved the child's life as a 9-year-old. The Rebbe went to Cheder. Who taught him in Cheder? The Yid who lived on this block, I believe, Reb Zalman Valenkin. And there were two classes. The younger class had several students, and the older class was the Rebbe alone. And the Rebbe would learn privately with the Melamed, and then the Melamed would learn the other children, and the Rebbe would review the lessons. Rabbi Ashkenazi writes that the Rebbe says in early years, you could see it, that the Rebbe always learned standing. Rebbe didn't sit down. Rebbe seen him standing up as a child and as a young man, standing at it. And he would stand with his face to the wall with the Torah and the Beis Yosef, and point with his finger and mumble and read. Eat up Torah like it's hot lokshim. When the Rebbe was 14 years old, Moshe Bitzalo, Alter, the brother of the then Gedolei Rebbe, visited Yekaterinoslav because of World War One. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on. There were a lot of immigrants, and the Rebbe's father brought him into the cheder. He wanted him to meet the Rebbe, and he walked over to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe was learning, I think, Masechet Bcheiros. He was learning a Taisus, and on this Taisus there's four kashas. There's a kasha with four terutzim. So the Moshe Bitzalel, this is the brother of the Gedolei Rebbe, asks the 14-year-old Rebbe, how come Tais has to give four terutzim? And the Rebbe answers him immediately, because on each teretz there's a problem from a different seder in Shas, from a different part of the Shas. And the Rebbe told him his whole thing, and then the Moshe Bitzalel says, he says, by us in Poland, I've never seen a child so young with such depth. He was blown away by the Rebbe's goyness at 14 years old. The Rebbe's father used to tell the Rebbe's mother that to the bar mitzvah he was a goa neilam. Rebbe Levick, he said, the Rebbe to the bar mitzvah to drive yard was a goa neilam. Now, one of the more interesting stories of the Rebbe's life is the story of his bar mitzvah. And I want to digress for a moment. The Rebbe's and Chana lived in Crown Heights. And she lived on the corner right over here in 1418 President Street. There was a Yid whose name was Nun Ben Yoichanan. Nun Ben Yoichanan is Nissen Gordon, Olav Shalom. Nissen Gordon. And he interviewed the Rebbe's mother, and he wrote a 10-part series that were published in the Yiddish Haim. And you should know, you could read them. If you know Yiddish, you could read them. The early Yiddish Haims. Der Zibet Lubavitch Rebbe, that's what it's called. 7-part series about the Rebbe's childhood, based on interviews that the Rebbe did with the Rebbe's mother. Now, the Rebbe was reading the Jewish Haim, the Yiddish Haim. The Rebbe used to add the Yiddish Haim. I hear the Rebbe wasn't so comfortable with it. Bottom line is that he published a 10-part series, an interview that he did with the Rebbe's mother. And there are stories that are told over there that are extremely authentic because they're stories that the Rebbe's mother told him. And she described the Rebbe's bar mitzvah. Of course, it was right before Pesach. You know, listen. But this was the oldest son of the Rebbe. And Umvasar Rav, you understand, the city of Yekaterinoslav was so proud of their Rav, and they knew that the Rebbe at 13 was a wunderkind. Everybody knew that he was something from a different planet altogether. And Thursday night there was a big Suda, a big feast. And the whole community came, and all the different factions and all the different groups and representation and gifts and speeches, and you know, the whole thing was very formal, very beautiful, very so forth. And the Rebbe said a drosha, spoke an Indian. I don't know what he spoke for a long time. And when the Rebbe finished speaking, he started to cry. And he cried so bitterly that every person in the room was crying with him. Why he was crying, nobody knows. But the Rebbe gevein tzered, the Rebbe cried till he made everybody in his bar mitzvah cry. During the bar mitzvah, this was Thursday night, the Rebbe's father, Rebbe Levick, kept on saying something to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe kept on hesitating. He wanted something from the Rebbe. The Rebbe Tzanchana doesn't want to say what it was. Nun Ben Yochanan writes, I don't know what it was that he wanted from him, but maybe he wanted that he should be a Rebbe. The Rebbe was 13 years old. And Rebbe Levick wanted him from the Rebbe. And he kept on asking the Rebbe, and the Rebbe kept on hesitating. This was Thursday night, Friday night, Shabbos. The bar mitzvah continued. There was a Shabbos, another speech and another feast and more covered and so forth and so on. And the whole time, everybody sees that the Rebbe Levick is wanting something from the Rebbe, and the Rebbe refuses to give it to him. Till Matzah Shabbos. Matzah Shabbos, the Rebbe agrees. What the Rebbe's father wanted from the Rebbe is not known. That's what it says in the Yiddish Haim. But as soon as the Rebbe agreed to what it was Rebbe Levick wanted from him, Rebbe Levick started to dance with a gewaldike simcha together with the Rebbe, and they danced and they sang and they celebrated the whole night. What the discussion was, nobody knows, but they know that something very dramatic happened in the days surrounding the Rebbe's bar mitzvah. After that, bar mitzvah, he did the same thing he did till his bar mitzvah. He sat and learned the Tereva Alaveda. The Rebbe never went out of his room. The Rebbe never had time for people. The Rebbe's brothers also were masmidim neiroim, but they had time for people. The Rebbe was so busy learning, he didn't have a second. There is one occasion that we know, two occasions that we know, where the Rebbe stopped learning and he did public service. The first one was, there was an outbreak of typhoid fever, Rachman and something. And in those days, 90 years ago, if you got typhoid fever, it was a death sentence. Mamish. And tens of thousands of people would die from these epidemics, from these plagues. So they used to make what was called quarantine. You know what quarantine means? They would push it, take a section of the city, they'd cordon it off, they put a fence around it, and if a person was diagnosed with typhoid fever, they put him over there. Every day a doctor would visit him with a mask and surgical gloves and make him comfortable, and push it, let him die. They didn't let families go next to him, they didn't let families see them because they were afraid of the contagion that could spread. When this typhoid fever hit Yekaterinoslav, the Rebbe stopped learning, and he devoted himself fully to helping people. Day and night, he went from patient to patient, cleaning them, and he helped many, many people, saved many, many people. Until he himself got the sickness, Rebbe became ill. And apparently the Rebbe lost his hair. The Rebbe lost his hair at a very young age. I heard, I don't know how true it is, that the Rebbe lost his hair because of the epidemic of typhoid. This is 1919. And the Rebbe got sick. And there was a period of several weeks where the Rebbe had such high fever that Klal Yochel, he was delirious. It seemed like he was speaking uncontrollably, without focus. But what was he saying? He was saying chassidus. He was speaking chassidus. And the Rebbe Tzanchana said that he kept on saying the same thing over and over again. He spoke about how unbelievably glorious the higher worlds are, and how the Eibish that abandons all the higher worlds so that a Yid should do a mitzvah in this physical world. That's what the Rebbe was saying in his delirium. There's a rumor that goes around, again this is unsubstantiated, that the Rebbe had a custom that every day he would bring his parents the mail. Every day he waited for the mailman to bring the mail. And so Gehazi, his parents assumed that the reason the Rebbe did this was because he wanted to do a mitzvah of kibud avim. But when the Rebbe was not well, he couldn't bring the mail. And one day the Rebbe got a letter. You're not allowed to read people's mail. But it was a postcard. A postcard, it's open. And the Rebbe was at that point, how old? 16 or 17 years old. And he was corresponding with the Rogachev Gaon, with the great Gaon of Rogachev. And the Rebbe didn't want his parents to know that he had this correspondence going on. This is what they say. And when the Rebbe wasn't well, they found out that the Rebbe had this correspondence at a very, very young age. And that the Rogachev spoke to him with Gevaldik Hadas HaKovit. That's one thing, one time. The other time that Rebbe interrupted his learning to get extremely involved in public service was when the Platon came, when the refugees came. World War I, it's so much the stage set of a World War II. People don't understand. World War I was terrible for Yidden. It was terrible, terrible, terrible for Yidden. All over Europe. The Yidden in Russia never had peace. But Yidden in Galicia had peace. And World War I was all over. From between World War I and World War II, Yidden in Europe suffered miserable poverty and anti-Semitism and displacement. And tens of thousands of refugees ended up in Yekaterinoslav. Tens of thousands, a lot of people. And the Rebbe said once by Fabrengin, my mother became the head of a committee to provide food, shelter, clothes, education, all kinds of services for all of these thousands of refugees. Okay, in other words, the refugees may have numbered as many Jews as were locals in Yekaterinoslav. And it was done with such covet and such dignity and such sensitivity. All the guests felt like they were invited guests. They didn't feel like they were invaders. They felt treated with such warmth. And there are people who have written, Freie people who have written, that when they were refugees in Yekaterinoslav, Rabbi Schneerson and his three sons took care of us. And the Rebbe and his brothers with their mother, really. The Rebbe said, my mother was the overseer of the whole project. He said, I never saw my mother, I never realized how capable my mother was till then, the Rebbe said. Her scope, her ability to operate on a gigantic scale. You know what it means to provide lodging and clothing and food for tens of thousands of people with very little notice. They just kept showing up It was an amazing, it was a monumental feat. And the Rebbe's in Chana, you know, she was the Rebbe's mother, you had Breite Kopp, Breite Plates, together with her children, organized it. This was another occasion that the Rebbe went out of his tzniyas. But aside for that, the Rebbe was sitting and learning. Bochum is to come from Lubavitch to Yekaterinoslav. Whenever they came from Lubavitch to Yekaterinoslav, they stayed in the Rebbe's parents' home. And the Rebbe made a point. The Rebbe's father used to say to them, "Come, I want to show you. I want to show you my children." The Rebbe sitting and learning. The Bochum would walk in and look at the Rebbe. They didn't even know. The Rebbe didn't even know that he walked into the room. Leza Nanis, who sat in Russian prisons for almost 20 years, came to Yechidus to the Rebbe. And he said to the Rebbe, "I was in your home when you were a Bochum, and your father brought me into your room that I should look at you, and he told me, Esvete Tenitzkimen, this fact that you're seeing my son now is going to help you." He says, spent 20 years in Russian prisons, and now he's in 770. So the Rebbe smiles and says, "Nu, Sitsinitsky kum, did it benefit you?" In other words, you see how it benefited him. He survived Stalin, Yimachshmevizachai. And they sat in the Tel Aviv Aved. There's a story that they tell about that illustrates the difference in the Rebbe and his brother Leibu, who was a few years younger than he was. Abacha came to Yekaterinoslav to raise money for Tem Chetmimim. So Leibu, the Rebbe's brother, said, "Come, I'll go with you from house to house." They went to all the people that they knew, all the Anashim Amidim, the more Balabatish people, and they raised funds. And the Rebbe said to him, "I don't have any time, but I'll give you a letter, you can go visit one man." So he took this letter that the Rebbe gave him, and he went to visit this one man, and he got more money from that one man than from Leibu's whole collection. I mean, that's just to tell you the two personalities, the same mention. This was the Rebbe. The thing in this piece of the story that's really, really odd, how come the Rebbe never went to Lubavitch? The Rebbe Rasha passed away, the Rebbe was 18. But the Rebbe at 18 is like another person at 70. He wasn't a little bocher. He's a giant. Tiba Mitzvah was a Gana Goyne. How does it happen that such a personality shouldn't go see his father's Rebbe? Rebbe Levik and the Rebbe Rasha were, you know, Nafshek Shura, but Nafshek, they were so deeply connected. So somebody once asked the Rebbe Sanchana, "How could it be you have such a garot and a son, such a gifted child, and you don't send him to the Rebbe?" So she said, "He wants to go, they're not letting him." Now who's they? Only two possibilities: his father or the Rebbe. Apparently, it was decided that the Rebbe should not meet the Rebbe Rashab. Years and years and years later, the Rebbe once told Reb Shmuel Levitin that he's very happy that he never met the Rebbe Rashab. Because if he had met the Rebbe Rashab, it may have tested and made more difficult his kashrus to the Rebbe the Shvetz and Friedrich and them. Okay, and we'll have to continue another time.